Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope. But I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away.
Going on, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Outdoors Podcast. As I record tonight's intro, it is Tuesday, November 25th. But as you are listening to this episode, it is Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. So I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. And if you're tuning in after the holiday, I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving with your friends and your families and your loved ones and those that are closest to you. I guess it'd be a great time to mention the things that I'm grateful for. I'm thankful for my health and my family and my friends that I consider family. But most of all, I'm thankful for my beautiful daughter and my lovely wife. Without them, I couldn't have the life that I have. My daughter changed my life for the best, and my wife reminds me every day why life is worth living. You know, so I know that sounds corny, but it's the truth, you know, and we're not here to go through life alone. And if I'm not going to go through life alone, why not have greatest sidekick of all time? So again, I hope you guys are enjoying or you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. As always, let's have some recognition for our supporters and our listeners and our friends and family here. Last week, I forgot to congratulate Dan Johnson, the CEO of the Sportsman's Empire, host of the Nine Finger Chronicles, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, and a slew of others. Congratulations to you, buddy. I know last year, if I'm remembering correctly, was a little bit of a tougher year for you. And this year, I know you decided to simplify things a bit. You know, you saw something that got your blood going and you put it down. So congratulations to you. And I'm happy that you're happy. I know for sure that there was one more in there, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So if that's yours, I apologize. And I'll get you guys some recognition next week after I remember. I would like to keep this intro relatively short. So today's episode welcomes back Dorch Huang, and we have a nice conversation about broadheads. Now, if you guys have been following along with the Science of Aeroflight series, you know that we spent, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 3 different episodes talking about broadheads. Now, this episode was kind of cool because we touched on some new stuff, but we also kind of summarized all the information from those other episodes. We started the episode off by kind of just catching up a little bit and talking about kind of our seasons as of late and different things going on. But the meat and potatoes of the episode was about broadheads, and we broke it down into 3 sections. Essentially, how a broadhead flies through the air, how a broadhead behaves on impact, and how a broadhead behaves in the bloodletting category. So how a broadhead causes a cut that leaves a certain type of broadhead. We talked about some broadheads that leave a great blood trail, and we talked about some broadheads, or I don't want to say individual broadheads, but we talked about some designs that don't maybe leave the greatest blood trail. But we also talked about this concept of cavitation, which is essentially when a broadhead is traveling so fast and rotating at such a high RPM that instead of the blood flowing like liquid, it turns the blood into a semi-solid, and it causes the deer or the animal that you're shooting at to not be able to breathe because that blood can no longer move oxygen through the system. It was a really cool conversation, and we went over some clarifying things that maybe I didn't truly understand going into this episode. As always, having Dorch on is fantastic. I love learning. Y'all know I'm a teacher at this point, and typically teachers make the worst students. They really do, and I'll be the first to admit it. But at the same rate, when I find something that I want to learn about and having the educational background, it really opens the door to asking the right questions and seeking the right information to really expand my knowledge. So it was just a great conversation, and I hope you guys really, really enjoy it. Now, before we get into the episode, let's talk about our sponsors real quick. As always, we have the Nested Tree Stand System. You guys know that I've loved this system since the day I got it. I'm still convinced that it is the best, most comfortable system to pack into the woods that I've ever used. I've used harnesses on tree stands where I use the tree stand seat as a shelf to carry my backpack. I've had large backpacks that had the means to strap the platform and the sticks to it. I've tried everything along the way. And the Nested Tree Stand, even though it's not the lightest on the scale, feels the lightest and the easiest to pack into the woods. Along with that, as y'all know at this point, they came out with the Kneequalizer, which is essentially a knee pad that you could put on the tree for those of you who are saddle hunters. If you're looking for a special gift for that special someone and you're interested in maybe looking into some Nested products, why don't you go ahead and use that code UT10 at checkout to save yourself 10% and to also help this podcast out. We have Fire Knock. Y'all know the spiel already. I truly believe in Fire Knock products. I believe in the system. I believe in the variables that it puts in my corner. And I just think he's got something to offer for everyone. So if there's something you're interested in checking out, head on over to fireknock.com and use the FACS system to find exactly what would fit on your arrows. Next up, we have Vitalize Seed. Al and Jared have just been absolutely phenomenal to us this year. We have found success using their food plot seed. Not only that, they're just a wealth of information, and they were willing to help me out all along the way with every step. Any wall that I ran into, or roadblock, or speed bump, Al was there to help me every step of the way. And at the end of the day, both our spring and our fall food plots flourished and grew way better than I ever expected. And we were able to harvest our two biggest deer off of our private property this year. So if you're interested in checking anything out over there, you can head on over to Vitalize Seed. If you guys like using scents and attractants and feed coatings and all that good stuff, then you definitely got to check out Rack Getter Scents. Gerard over at Rack Getter has been phenomenal to us this year and last year and over the last couple of years. And he's just got his finger on the pulse. He knows what the guys in the area are looking for, and he tries to give you those products that meet your expectations. We here have been using his products for the last 2 years, and we have found success using them. The mock scrape scents work great. The corn coating worked phenomenally this year. The sprays work great. And if deer isn't your thing, he's got stuff for bear, he's got stuff for turkey, and he's got stuff for fishing. So head on over to rackgetterscents.net. Check out what he has to offer. We also have Hunt Arsenal. This year, I started using the Hunt Arsenal Cloud Infinity Saddle, and it is just the most comfortable harness of any type I've ever worn in my entire career of hunting. I'm not just saying that, guys. I'm really not. I've been a hang-on hunter my whole life. I got into saddle last year. Y'all know I'm not the greatest with heights, but once I strap that cloud on and I get to the top of my tree, I have zero questions, zero doubts. I feel comfortable. I feel safe, and I'm ready to go. They also have, in my opinion, the greatest aiders on the market. They have the only collapsible sticks out on the market, and they also have a selection of saddle platforms to check out. So head on over to huntarsenal.com today and check out their entire line of products. Last but not least, if you guys are in the northeastern Pennsylvania area, you have two shops that you have to check out. The first is Silver Birch Archery Shop over in Milford, Pennsylvania. Russ is the owner over there. He is fantastic. He is hands-on. He's one of the guys working on your bow, but at the same time, he's just a down-to-earth, amazing, incredible human being. He's been great to me. I had some issues with my bow just before the season started this year, and he made sure that I was out and ready to go when the season started. So thank you very much, Russ. And if you guys are a little bit more west of that area, you can come on into the Hunter's Gallery in Hamlin, Pennsylvania. I just happen to work there. I'll either be behind the gun counter or the bow counter. I would love to meet you guys, shake some hands, bullshit a little bit. It would be a good time, especially once the season dies down. I'm always looking for a way to stay in touch. So that's Hunter's Gallery in Hamlin, Pennsylvania. Guys, that's all I got for you today. Again, I hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And remember, success is just a commitment away. Without further ado, Dor Schwong and all things Broadhead.
Winged Tail Boys Podcast is brought to you by Truthsticks Custom Arrows. Built with FireKnock technology, Truthsticks Custom Arrows simply fly flatter, spin faster, and improve arrow efficiency downrange. With two signature arrows for the compound bow and a signature crossbow bolt, they've got something for everyone. If you're ready to take the guesswork out of archery and take the best performing arrow into the field, then check out Truthsticks Custom Arrows at wingandtailoutdoors.com and experience the truth of arrow flight.
Hey, how you doing, Dorch? Welcome back to the podcast.
Welcome. How are you? Have you been hunting?
Have I been hunting? No. Every time I feel like I'm okay to go, my hands like tighten up. It's just been terrible. So at this point, the Pennsylvania season, as we're recording this today, it's Saturday, November 22nd. In Pennsylvania, technically, the bow season ended yesterday. There's a little bit of an off period. So today started bear, the bear season. I believe that runs until Wednesday. Then it stops for Thanksgiving. And then I believe next Saturday, it opens again with the deer rifle season.
Oh, wow.
So my problem is with my hand. and my listeners kind of know this already, but anytime I'm holding on to something or I have pressure against my palm, my fingers go numb.
Oh, so,
and that's on my grip hand. My left hand is okay. I can't flex it any more than this, but I can still pull and do everything. The problem is my grip hand, I can't hold the bow properly. I can't give it the force against it that it needs. I respect these animals too much.
Mm-hmm.
I respect these animals too much to shoot at them knowing that I'm not at the top of my game. So I just can't in good faith do that. You know what I mean?
Understand. I mean, it's a good thing. Well, I mean, what we found out that in Illinois, of course, our season starts on October 1st and it ended the first week of February.
Okay.
January, first week of January. So that we got 3.5 months of hunting. But the downside is that, upside is that you can hunt bow hunt every single day if you live in Chicago.
Okay.
Polk County and the west of DuPage County have no gun season. So you can hunt on October 1st. All the way to the second weekend of the year.
Really?
Yep. That's the reason I've been back in 2005. I hunted 107 days.
I wish.
That was my first retirement.
I wish. I gotta be honest with you. I don't think I've hunted 107 days total in the last 5 years.
Like this year, I think I hunted, 15 days? At first, I was really picky. I saw a few. I said, wait a minute. This year's deer is weird. I don't see any small deer. They are all pretty good size.
Yeah.
Body-wise. Then I talked to a few other guys in my area. It seems to me that we got a really big coyote population. Yeah. So everybody got big deer. Nobody is shooting small, which is cool.
We have the same problem in New York. Our coyote population is insane. So I finally got a group of guys together that are interested in doing some coyote control.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I get word that the family's done hunting for the year,
mm-hmm.
I think my buddy needs to wait till duck season is over. As soon as everybody is free, he's got the calls, he's got the night scopes, he's got everything we need. And then on our property, the main area where we see coyote all the time, we have our shed blind. It's literally a shed. We put tables in it. There's chairs. There's windows cut out of it. You know, we got heaters and everything. You know, so we'll sit in there in the dark. We'll put the call out and the decoy or whatnot, and go to town. It's gonna be a good time.
Well, actually, my buddy Jim Moore and then another gentleman out in the West India, Granville and Greenville. You know what they shoot with? CO2 rifles.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Those things are insane these days.
You know what? Why they go that route?
Quiet.
It's so much cheaper.
Well,
you can blast the whole night. You just have to fill the gas. That's it.
Yeah, that's fair. But you know what?
I mean, two long rifle is expensive. What do I?
Well, 22 is pretty expensive. But for my wedding, now we're going back 2.5 years now. My brother and my best friend were my two best men, and they bought me a 17 HMR for my wedding. Because I wanted one. I was dying for one. So they got me that, and that is going to be my dedicated coyote gun. Now, everybody says a 17 isn't strong enough. It's not enough of a round. Well, my brother and I were putting shotgun shells on the backstop at 100 yards, and we were shooting shotgun shells at 100 yards. So if we can do that, I think we could put it in a coyote's eyeball or in his ear cavity, and I think we're going to be just fine.
Yep, and then not to mention those skins are worth something too.
Yeah. Well, yes, not what they used to be, unfortunately, which I think is a lot of the problem with, like, you're saying that there's mostly big deer in your area where you're at. The other side of that is the turkey populations in a lot of the states, especially in the Northeast, are really, really going down quickly.
Not where I am, there's turkey every freaking way.
That's awesome. And in Pennsylvania too, but in New Jersey, let me think. New Jersey, I want to say Connecticut, New Hampshire. I'm going off memory, so I could be getting it wrong, but 2 or 3, maybe even 4 different states ended their fall turkey season this year because the turkey numbers are really dropping down. And some of the big reasons for that are people aren't shooting enough predators and they're out eating the turkey. But even worse than that, no one's out trapping anymore. So you're not getting not getting raccoons, you're not getting the opossums, you're not getting all of these nest raiders, you know? So when there's always that fluctuation, right? So back in the day, people were killing coyote. There was a lot of money in the pelts, you know, and the raccoons and everything, the foxes. So people were out trapping them and all that stuff. But that is, in my opinion, it's one of those hunting arts that are slowly but surely disappearing.
Yep. You know? But you know what? When I just come back from this thing, conservation area, which is south of Chicago, okay? Do you know the biggest turkey that was captured in Inland and go to other places is out of this main conservation? 32 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. That's big enough to feed both our families for Thanksgiving.
So when they first caught it, I remember I talked to Eric, the DNL guy. Actually, the Dimsley Conservation is next to the Dimsley Game Farm, which they breed pheasants to hunt in Dimsley Conservation. So they found out that they have turkeys, and they're using those shotgun-based net, and go and catch them like that. They caught the biggest one is 32 pounds. I mean, that's a big turkey.
Of course it is. That's a fawn.
Well, but you know what? Actually, it's north of it. It's where the Madewan, which is run by the U.S. Forest Services, that's the biggest deer out of Illinois or out of the world that I've ever seen. 525 pounds, whitetail. 525 pounds, whitetail, 8 point.
From where?
The Spring Conservation, next to the, it's called, the, used to be called the Arsenal, which is on Hoff Road and 55. Now it's called the Madewan. It's 5 mile by 5 mile. The whole area big, okay? They only opened the first top 5 mile because they haven't taken all the emanation that's in lower 20 square miles.
The 500-pound whitetail is insane.
No, 500. I mean, I shot a 375 myself, so it's not that crazy.
That's we don't see things like that around here. I will say we don't have a scale at our property right now, and we're going to change that next year. Now that I work at the hunting store, you know, we get them.
You know how I know mine? Because we look at the scale. See, I shot mine out of Volo Bog. Brett is the superintendent back then. Oh, there's three of us. We can't move that. So we got another one. We got a winch to drag that thing on the back of the gator, mm-hmm. and then we push it on the scale. They got a scale there. Yeah. But you go up to 350, and then based on, and you go above it. I say, well, based on this, I think it's more like a 375 or 373. We just call it 375.
Yeah. You know, and that's what I'm saying. You know, I could get a scale. We could hook it up to the, gambrel. You know what I mean? And we can know for sure. And honestly, at the end of the day, who cares how heavy a deer is, right? But it's cool to know, because if you're in a place where deer typically don't get really big, and you shoot 175, a 200-pound deer, then you know you're doing something right on your property. You know that they're eating well, you know? So mm-hmm. it's not for a, oh, I shot the biggest deer this year thing. For me, from a land manager standpoint on private property, it's always really nice to know that what you're doing is working.
Actually, the fine art deer on every single fine art package, that 17 point, mm-hmm. I know exactly how heavy that deer is before I got it.
Really?
297.
How'd you know that?
Because we take it out in the scale and then we got it.
Okay.
But it was a hell. It was hell. I said, just got it right here. He said, no, that deer is really big. Let's just drag it. And then, I mean, of course, on a 370, on a 350 scale, we got it. Oh my God, this is so big. But then we got it. Wow, the gutting part actually dropped the deer close to 70 pounds. That's a lot.
Really?
Yes. Hey, you're talking the lung, the guts, the whole nine yard out. That's a lot.
Of course.
I didn't know it was that much in it.
Yeah. And the deer my dad shot this year, it died in the middle of all this thick shit. And there was just one deer trail to drag it out on. And we didn't want to gut it in the woods because, long story short, we were running out of time. My wife was at the cabin with the baby all by herself. I wanted to get back as fast as I could. I said, screw it. Let's just bring the deer to the cabin. I'll gut it there. Well, I end up dragging it out. Long story short, it was so damn heavy we couldn't get it onto the Kubota, so I had to freaking gut it there anyway. It was hands down the heaviest deer that I have ever had to drag out.
Hey, just put it this way.
On it was 200 easy.
I'll tell you a funny story. 3 years ago, hunting in my buddy's backyard, which is a church called the Friend. It's a church in South Chicago. It next to Horstead. I shot a big, about 160 pound, 70 pound size button bug, because it's public. I mean, you've seen one, you pretty much take it.
You said 170 pound button buck? What the hell? What are they eating?
Well, that's normal. I mean, you go to Wilmington, Illinois, you're going to see 250 pound does.
I need to come hunt by you.
Oh, well, anyway, I shot that deer because I thought it was a big doe. I didn't know it was a button buck. So it jumped. I mean, of course, I using swing blade, I shot at it. The deer do three jumps and drop into the creek.
Okay.
And then I figured, well, it's not. See, the creek was got a 7 to 8 foot bank. Because I shot it, it only just what? We're talking less than 25 yards. It was freaking dive into the creek. Also, I climbed down the creek, tried to drag the deer up. It's not happening. Then I finally, of course, I called my buddy Jim Moore. I said, what are we going to do? I said, drag it up. I tried to lift the deer. No, it was like a freaking solid block of solid. Wow. Then you know what? Jim was saying, hey, I bet that he died with his nose in the water and his lung is full of water. I said, that's really bad. So, of course, both me and Jim are both in our 60s. And we tried to move the deer a little bit. And then we got about like 6 inch of water in the creek. It ain't moving. I say, forget it. I go back to my Porsche. I grab my designed a winch with the 33,000, with a 13,000 pounds cord. So I wrap around the deer. And then I wrap around the tree and press the drill. Now I got the thing off the bank. It's now on flatland. I say, well, okay, good. Let's cut it. Oh, it was not pretty.
I remember you telling me about that. I want one of those winches one of these days.
No, let me finish. I put my bibs, my jacket, my shoes, just like freaking covered with blood.
Really?
Yes, because imagine the entire lung cavity just filled with water and blood. Jeez. Trust me, the drive home with I had to take everything. I was down to my underwear and went in the car because that thing was just looked like blood.
And I can only imagine what it was to pull that thing out of the water.
No, because the winch just sprayed it up. I mean, I did the same thing when I got that deer, because my last deer a few days ago, I shot one. It was on the back of a 3/4 miles on the road. So I pushed the deer all the way down the hill. Then I parked my car next to it and throw the winch down and just press the button and winch it up the last 55 yards to the road and then throw it on the back and be done.
Right. I got you.
You know what? I'm not like my 30s. I can hold one deer and walk from a Kickapoo State Park lot 1 to lot 7. No, that's not happening. I'm not doing that 1 3/4 mile drag. You don't know. I got my tree lounge on my back, the old tree lounge. I got my Oneida. I got my jacket, all my stuff. And then I tied the freaking deer on my right hand and dragged the sucker from lot 7 to lot 1. Because my car is in lot 1.
Okay.
Because they closed lot 7 at sundown.
Which makes no sense, because if you're in the woods hunt, that makes no sense to me. If they know that if they know that people are hunting and they're parking there to go hunting, and the best time to shoot a deer is the last hour and the first hour, why would they close it at sundown? It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, because they close the gate at lot 7, you can't get out. So they already told you, if you're hunting, you better park in lot 1 because open 24/7.
At least they warned you, I guess.
I know, because I have to call somebody one time.
Terrible.
Yeah, talk about hunting, because you know, let's talk about the early days when I was using vertical bows. Back then I was using Hoy Chuck, but the thing never fly right because I don't know better. I was using a Satellite Titan, I didn't know better. Then I was using the Blitz from what's the company called? Yeah, but that's one of the best broad ever made, Blitz. And then I got to meet Brad Fulton, the Ramcat, one of the best bleeding broadhead you have ever found.
Yeah?
Yeah. If you want one broadhead
this year
if you want a good bleeding broadhead, you want a good blood trail on a low poundage bow, we absolutely proved, because in jail, blessed jail, we proved that a Ramcat, a 1 3/8 inch Ramcat, will take less than 28 pound pressure to go through about 14 inch of ballistic gel.
Okay.
If you shoot a 40 pound bow, huh?
We sell them in the shop. The long.
That's a good system. I remember just before Brett Fulton died, the worst is from what, 1999 to 2022. The Ramcat is not very good, because whoever bought them go with the cheaper supplier, they pressed the price so low, they never even QC the broadhead on the blades. Mm. At that time, I remember some of the blades like close to 5 grain difference in weight.
Yeah, no, that's not cool.
Yeah, that's the reason all of a sudden it just doesn't fly. But you'll fly okay if you shoot 260, not when you're flying a Scorpion bow at 420 or 440.
Yeah.
It just won't fly.
These crossbows these days, they're hitting numbers that are just, we never thought we'd be able to reach with bows. You know what I mean? Like, some of these Ravens are over 500 feet per second.
Well, what Ravens? How about the 10.515? At 400 grain, you'll do 515 feet per second.
That's what I'm saying. And it's awesome. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome. The kinetic energy and the momentum that you have.
That's
awesome. But if you don't know how to build an arrow properly, and you, mm-hmm. and you don't match the broadhead with the speed, you're setting yourself up for failure. And it's not even... to an extent, I don't even blame the archer for it because they don't know what they don't know.
Yep. Let me tell you exactly what happened with the last 3 years with my customer. I will tell you, a group of people in North Carolina, they are all shooting at the Raven 500 and the R29X. They told me that there's 25 of them. They shoot at 32 deers. They recover 8.
Oh, that's not cool.
You know what happened? They all used the Rage or the original Raven broadheads. Mm-hmm. They know all the, I mean, the most, all of them are really good shot. At least the guy was telling me. He said they all shoot the kill zone. But the thing is that when you shoot at that speed with a mechanical expandable broadhead in that class, do you know what happened? Never opened.
I was just about to say it either doesn't open or it's going through the animal so fast that it doesn't have time to open inside the animal.
Correct. And not to mention, we're talking North Carolina. North Carolina deer are soft. They're just like the Mississippi. Believe it or not, based on my understanding, Mississippi deer is actually tougher in skin than North Carolina deer.
Really?
The only deer that is worse than North Carolina, softer than North Carolina, would be Florida.
Wow.
I mean, those deers are so soft, you can poke it with the chopsticks. Oh, of course, then I told him. I mean, that was the problem. See, when Brett Fulton first made that broadhead, I was talking with Jim. He said, wait a minute. I got a bow that 180 to 200 KE. You're telling me they went through that deer at 27 KE. So assume I only got 150. So make it simpler. I got 177. That means if the broadhead go through the animal, it's still 150 KE left.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
Lose an arrow, break a broadhead, all the above.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. That's the reason. That was the year. I think that is 2012 is when it happened. When Jim came out of Scarpet. He said, Dodge, you know that Ramcat is great, especially with the SVG that you designed to fly super fast. Except, you know, the SVG, the total cutting surface is actually not 1/3, it's 1 inch. Because we found out that at 440 feet per second, that three eighths of an inch causing, it actually start planing.
Really?
Yes. That's even with a blazer, it start planing. Just that 3/8 of an inch.
A mechanical was planing?
No, Ramcat is not mechanical, remember. The Ramcat is a trick blade.
Okay, I know that, but we've talked about, the one we sell now is mechanical. There's a
Ramcat? Yeah, there's a Ramcat. We're talking the original Ramcat, okay. The one that based on the smoke, the one that with the blade coming down at 25 degree, that broadhead with the pointed tip.
Gotcha.
So that's one and three eighth, and the other SPG that I redesigned the blade, that's at 1 inch.
Okay.
That 1 inch broadhead actually take less than 25 pound KE to go through an animal.
Wow.
Yeah, actually that broadhead was used by one of my customer who is in his bucket list to shoot an elk. That's the same customer who shoot a Switchback XT with the 42 to 43 pound pull and a 26 inch draw and shot through an elk at 68 yards.
That's incredible.
With a 325 grain arrow, with an arrow concept 2.0.
And you know what's crazy, George? Three years ago, I would call bullshit. I'm not going to lie. Before we took the time to sit down and really go over everything from the beginning and learn about arrow flight and the science and the physics of arrows and all that stuff, I would 100% have called bullshit. 2 years ago.
No, it's not. The guy actually had an elk back in my 2013 or 14 catalogs. He was on the bottom. It's an old gentleman telling he is barely, what, 5'4 or 5'5. That's the reason he only got a 26 inch draw. And his late 70s, he's not going to pull anything. You say, I'm putting 42 now. I will work up to 45.
Yeah. You know, but there's also something to be said about though, because it's really cool to see guys who either aren't in their prime anymore, right? They're not able to do what they used to be able to do, or they got into hunting late. And instead of giving up or saying, you know what, I'm gonna go to a crossbow or God forbid quitting hunting completely, they say, no, I'm gonna live within my means and I'm gonna use equipment that can get the job done with what I have to offer it.
Well, as a matter of fact, Jeremy is the one who built him that arrow. He built it on, I think it's a Carbon-Deck Cheetah. And, I do recommend using the Ramcat SPG. And original. That was the year that Matthew made the Halon. I say, no, the Halon is not going to be good enough. So I actually re-titanium his Switchback XT.
Okay.
That's what he shot the elk with.
Dude, we had someone come into the shop. and I don't remember what Matthews it was. It might have even been a Halon. It might have been. I can't remember, but this guy came in with it. He had just started shooting a bow a year ago. He had a 29-inch draw length shooting a I forget how heavy his arrow was. I want to say it was around 405 grains, and that bow was hitting 307 feet per second.
Yeah, because he got the draw.
My goodness, I couldn't believe it.
Well, actually, the reason that I insist that the Halon is not as good as the Switchback XT, because Switchback XT is a 65% add off. So his long-range power, the KE developing a longer range, is going to be better. And he proved it. You know, that's one thing, you know, people keep on saying that. I mean, you know, lately I've been looking at Facebook and I go to bed just scrolling through all the hunting videos. You know what surprised me? How many guys and girls that shooting 70-pound bow, at least 28-inch draw, shooting a lighter knock arrow, it go into animal about 4 or 5 inches, it kill them, the animal run away with the lighter knock just bouncing and so on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You know, you think about it, all those guys are shooting at least 60 pounds. And this is what the result is.
No, with bows these days, and I've said this plenty of times at this point. With bows these days, I don't understand. Now, granted, a long shot, I get it. You know, if you're taking 65, 70-yard shots, if we were seeing those videos with long shots that didn't pass through or just the...
No. This is not the case. To be fair, if you look at those videos, every shot that's over 30 yards always pass through.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. If it was reversed, right? Like in my mind, let's say I didn't know anything right now and I'm watching hunting videos and the short and all the short shot, I would expect all the short shots to pass through and the far shots not to pass through because of an energy perspective. But the truth of the matter is I honestly can't, now that I'm thinking about it, I can't think back ever seeing a video of a longer shot not having the arrow at least go into the veins. Don't get me wrong, there are times where they're not complete pass-throughs. But but then I see day after day, time after time, 10-yard shots, 15-yard shots, 8-yard shots, where like you're saying, the arrow just stops. And I don't get it. At least in the past, I didn't get it. But after our conversations and, you know, being a part of the arrow building process and all that good stuff now, I kind of understand it now. I really do.
Yeah, actually, if you just simply, I mean, like we go to Facebook on the reels and then look for all the, I mean, the moment you start looking hunting view, it starts keeping you. Lately, I've spent about at least an hour or two just before go to bed and this all put me to sleep.
Yeah.
I said, wait a minute, this guy got a green light. No, that's not mine. But wait a minute, they're going 5 inches, the arrow with the arrow jumping, flipping up and down, and then the deer died. Yeah. But the deer run at least 100 to 150 yards.
Right, yeah. So this is a really cool conversation we're having because you and I don't really get a lot of time to catch up these days. You know, I've been busy, you got a lot of stuff going on, but this conversation here is really, really interesting. So I think we need to give it some time, right? So when we're talking about... Broadheads have, in my opinion, broadheads have three different categories where you need to consider when you're looking to buy a broadhead. Number one, how well does it fly through the air?
At what speed?
Right. Number two, how well does it use the energy that it has when it hits the animal? And step three, how well does it penetrate? Well, no, I'm sorry. Step two would be how well does it use the energy and penetrate through an animal? And step three is how does it functionally kill the animal?
Well, actually, I think you missed one of the most important part.
Go ahead.
How well does it work with the vein and the shaft?
Okay. I was including that within the flight characteristics, but I understand where you're going with that. So let's start with number one. Okay. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but we could recap. There's no problem with that. When someone's looking for a broadhead, when you're under 260 feet per second, 270 feet per second, unless it's a really terribly, terribly, terribly made broadhead, you know, it should fly relatively well, right? Am I accurate?
Yes. Actually, under 260 feet per second, nearly all broadhead will fly well unless the broadhead's blade is actually loose. Then none of the broadhead would fly well.
Okay. And that's a structural integrity issue. And that's
correct. Because at that moment, when the blade is, I learned that because of the the Spitfire, the Hoychuk, and also the NAP. And oh, not to mention the Muzzies.
Okay.
If the blade moved, my gosh, it's not going to work.
I will not ever again ever use a broadhead that has replaceable blades. For me personally, like the Muzzies, for example, where they have the two blades that interlock with each other and then you just screw the tip on, it locks in place.
Mm-hmm.
Not for me. They've killed thousands upon thousands of deer. I understand that they can kill deer. They just leave too much that can go wrong. They're just not for me.
Well, actually, you know, the problem with that design is not the design with that product. I found out because they use too soft aluminum that the ferro deformed. At least for the one I have found out. When the ferro deformed, when you replace the blade, the thing do not fly right.
Okay.
Because the ferro, the structure. In other words, just like if your frame of your car is bent, I don't care how you fix it.
It's still bent.
Exactly. And that was the same thing. I remember I used to use quite a bit of Grim Reaper in the days. Mm-hmm. And the moment I move it to Aerovane, it's not for me.
Too much.
I mean, as
rotation.
It literally turned the ferro into a pretzel.
You know what's funny?
At least that's with me. Some people are having very good luck with it. I actually found out that after the braid and ferro turned into a pretzel, I just say, well, you know. I mean, you know, if you got a brand new one, you shoot it, but that's the end of it.
Yeah.
But then, what's to be fair with you, and then I skip using it for a while. Then I say, what's wrong with it? You're not... If you're asking for usability, then this should not be this is not the one for you. And that's how I finally tell myself and settle with it. I still recommend it because a lot of people like the way it kills. But then you look at the newer G5 stuff, like the Mega Meat. That's a beautiful design.
Oh, yeah. So far, so good. I haven't really heard many bad things about them.
Right. And then I've got company with other broadhead designs. Some of them are just, how do I say it? I think it sold more people than killed deer. In other words, the design, just like some fishing lures, I think it caught the customer, it caught the fisherman that catch fish.
You ain't kidding. So if under 260 feet per second on a stable broadhead, you could pretty much shoot any broadhead. Okay, so let's put that aside. Now let's talk over 260 feet per second. What kind
260 to 315. That's what you call it, the embarrassing stage. Okay.
Is that because some broadheads that aren't perfect can still get away with it?
Correct. Because in other words, your chance, your design, your vane, your let off, and also your front of center design, that whole thing can make that broadhead good and bad.
Okay.
Let me just put a few things. Like you're shooting a range, you put extra weight in the front, like putting something like a 50 or 175 grain insert. Some people do it at 166.
Okay.
And then you're shooting an 85% LF at a deer that's 20 yards, not like 15 yards. The arrow go into it depends on that itself. Also depends on how the arrow impact with the trajectory and the bend of the arrow. If the arrow is bending, say, I'm assuming the arrow is bending at 12 and 6 o'clock, and the broadhead is actually cutting in it with the blade at 6 and 9 o'clock. I will guarantee your penetration is going to be less than 2 inches.
Why is that?
Because the moment it goes in, the arrow goes up, the entire force down of the blade just do something like a slap motion to the meat, and all the energy was lost in pushing down the meat instead of cutting.
So do you want your, so is this?
You don't know. You do not know because at that moment, the arrow are flexing elliptically. You have no control over it.
And this is with two blade broadheads, you're saying? Or is it with any broadhead?
With two blade broadhead, it's worse because you got a chance on perfect and a chance of probably worst case and best case scenario within one broadhead. So if the broadhead and the blade and the shaft is spinning, is bending exactly at the same position. Remember, the first dynamic bend of the arrow shaft is only on launch.
Yes.
After the first one, the second one go in is off from 12 o'clock to 6 or 8 o'clock, 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock. It can be any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reverse bends go back to 12. So at least you've got a certain amount. But what happened, the flex is in the second motion. And the broadhead go in at, say, at that moment, your broadhead is flexing at 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock. And your broadhead go in at 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock. As you go in, all the motion is pushing the blade down towards the meat. You won't go in 3 inch. And that is what a lot of people have been saying, wait a minute, this range will definitely go in. No, because the blade is ready to open. And when at that moment you flex the arrow, certainly at 12 o'clock when the blade is at 3 and 9 o'clock, all the energy is used in flexing it. there's no penetration.
And that's in just about any mechanical, right? Every mechanical.
No, actually, it depends on it. Not true, because see, some of the mechanical, like the archery probe, like the old, what do you call those? Gosh, I'm a brain fart right now. That's called the.
To be honest with you, I thought rage was so. This is how naive I was growing up. I thought rage was the original mechanical broadhead.
No, it's not. The first one is Gators for that design. That design is actually made by Ronkey Martin Gators. Then Rage bought the pattern and rebadged it in Rage.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, the Blitz. The Blitz is actually another Rocky Mountain called Rocky Mountain Blitz. It was one of the best broadhead out there. I just don't know why they stopped making it. It's the only broadhead that is aerodynamically correct.
Really?
And it was such a nice design. It was such a... Because the Rage, the Blitz, the entire furrow is less than 1 inch long. And the blade, you can go in from the left side or the right side, just changing the blade direction. Now you can shoot that thing up to, I would say, I successfully shoot it up to 440 feet per second with no problems.
Wow.
So I do not mind somebody remake that. I mean, I don't think you got a pattern on it.
Why don't you remake it?
What's the point? Yeah, maybe I should. I mean, you know, it's out there. I mean, it is a very good design. I mean, it's a solid design.
I mean, the way I see it, the reason I recommend it, and we're going to get into this a little bit as we get further into this podcast, but we were talking off air right now about how a majority of the broadheads that you offer, you pretty much recommend them for high-speed crossbows.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So maybe being able to produce something like that again would give a good option.
Well, actually, if you look at history of broadhead, there's a few broadhead that's really good. That was one broadhead that was remade by so many companies. It's like the Eastman broadhead, the Switchback XT. That's a beautiful broadhead. I mean, it's fantastic cutting. You only need about 25 pound pressure to go through it. It flies decent all the way up to 330. Not anything more than that, because you are talking like 1.5 to 1.75 inch cut. It's beautiful stuff. I mean, the fall cross is all the way in the front. It's such a nice broadhead. I mean, there's a few broadhead out there. Just, I would say, why would everybody stop making it? It's just good, period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some broadhead should never be made again, like the Carbon Express F-15 and F-16. Sorry, they can sue me on that, but they should never, ever make that again, ever. Because nobody need a broadhead that whistles. Screams, not whistles, screams.
No. That'd be frustrating. So when we're talking about the flight of an arrow, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We all know at this point that there are two schools of thought, and most people fall far on one side or the other. And it's mm-hmm. either mechanical or fixed blade. So from a flight standpoint, tell me what your... So I'm gonna tell what you recommend for a fixed blade, because we've talked about this extensively. For a fixed blade, we recommend a broadhead that is an inch or shorter in length from front to back.
Up to an inch and a half. I mean, to be fair, if you're shooting under 280, it can be all the way to 2 inch. It doesn't matter. Okay. It really don't matter.
Well, let's assume it's a realistically fast compound bow. So let's say someone is hitting 300 feet per second. 300 is a nice, round, realistic number. If somebody's shooting a faster compound bow where aerodynamics matter, one and a half inch or shorter in length, no wider than, I think we said, what was it, 1 1/4 or 1 2/8? Or a
1 3/16 is pretty much your limit.
1 3/16 in width. Right, that's for a
fixed blade. Yeah, opening width. Yeah, fixed blade. Yes,
that's for a fixed blade. That's gonna give you more than enough of a cutting surface. That's gonna give you a true flying broadhead. And honestly, when you have a fixed blade that is as narrow as 1 3/16, it makes it a lot stronger than a broadhead that's wider. You know, with blades that go out wider, because that rotational pull on those blades can cause one to shear or bend or break or whatever the case may be.
Well, actually, you know, I'll throw you on thing, but I'll just give an idea.
Uh-huh.
I have an aerodynamically proven broadhead that's over 2 inch cut in high speed for vertical and crossbow too. I don't think the world is ready. That's all I got to say.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
I got a broadhead design that's over 2 inch in size, that's aerodynamically correct, up to 500 feet per second.
Long?
That's a fixed blade.
Long or wide?
Wide cut.
Really? Fixed blade?
Yes, fixed blade.
Oh my God. Now I'm interested.
And by the way, the blade do not face forward.
Really? Oh my goodness. I don't know if the world is ready for this.
No.
Side note, this is completely irrelevant to what we're talking about, but if you guys go to fireknock.com and you go over to the research tab, and there's a link there where you can look at every single patent that Dorje has out. And he has a bunch of them that are pretty much just, you know, it's got a quick little description, a patent number, and release date to be determined. And there are just things like Dorje and I have talked about this off air in extensively. And he says, Chris, I have so many different ideas and different designs that I know could work, but the industry just isn't ready for them yet.
Trust me. I mean, even like Aerovane, the industry is not ready unless you really know what you're doing.
You know what though? I'm actually going to give you a different perspective on that. The people, mm-hmm. there are so many people now that I work in a bow shop and I get to talk mm-hmm. to people every single mm-hmm. day. Mm-hmm. You can't believe how many people don't even know that it exists, right?
I'm not surprised.
And when you talk to people and they, you could tell the people that care to learn and are interested mm-hmm. in learning new things and people that are set mm-hmm. in their ways. And I say mm-hmm. that, and I don't say that in a negative way. There are people mm-hmm. out there who have been hunting for 10, 15, 20, 30 years who have had a system work and they want to keep using that. And there's no problem with that whatsoever. But we're getting to a point now where there's all these podcasts and all this science research and all this data and all these things that people are actually starting to become interested in. And little mm-hmm. little by little, more and more people are starting to see the benefit of the Aerovanes. So I fully believe in them. You already know that. And there are a lot of people that I'm talking to that at least are willing to give it a try. And that's all mm-hmm. I ever ask. Give them a try. Buy six. Buy half a dozen. You don't need to buy a dozen. But I promise you, if you try them, you won't shoot another arrow.
That's the case. But then, of course, that's what I always said. If I talk to any of those customers, I always ask the first question, what's your bullet speed? What's the broadhead you have to shoot?
Right.
That's the real question.
Yeah. So now let's look at the other side of the spectrum. Tell us, mm-hmm. tell us the qualities of a mechanical broadhead that will fly well on a 300 feet per second compound bow.
Well, actually, that's quite a feel. I mean, unfortunately, everybody looking for the maximum cut. To be fair with you, that's a major mistake.
I agree.
Because every time you look for maximum cut, the process of the blade opening can take up 15 to 20, up to 30 kg. If you shoot a bow, say, with 70 kg, you just give up about half the energy on opening the blade.
Yep. And it's more torque, and it's more resistance, and it's mm-hmm. the larger cutting diameter. Yes, bigger cut, but you also run a greater risk of hitting another bone. So
mm-hmm.
I've had this conversation literally five times in the last 2 weeks that there's nothing free in archery. It is one of one of the only things I can think of that you never get something without giving up something else. So if you mm-hmm. if you want a big cutting diameter, I understand why the perception is there. I understand why people want a larger cutting diameter. But this is what you're giving up by using a wider cutting broadhead.
Not penetrating, too much energy in wasting an opening blade, and non-reliable fighting trajectory.
Yes.
Which one would you willing to give up? Answer is all three. That's what happens when you have a large blade.
You know, and it's hilarious because you and I have talked about this year. I went to, this year I'm shooting the 85 grain, you heard that correctly, 85 grain, tooth of the arrow, 4-blade vented, 1-inch cut broadhead. And the damage that I saw that broadhead do and how well it flies, I have no reason to change. The only thing I'm thinking about doing is maybe going to 100 grains next year, just to give a little bit more front of center. Right now I'm at 7%, 7.5%. And to be mm-hmm. honest with you, even Jeremy and I were talking about it. He goes, why 85 grains? And I was like, well, I wanted to shoot a balanced arrow. He said, yeah, but what do you say? I don't remember if it was accuracy was the word he used. There was something
the trajectory drift. Yeah,
right. The drift, he said, aren't you having a problem with that? I said, absolutely not. I said, now granted, I'm not shooting my broadheads out to 100 yards. I'm not going to shoot at a deer over 50 yards right now. That's my personal comfort zone. Not by skill level, but by after 50 yards, there's too many variables. There's too many mm-hmm. things that could go wrong. So out to my comfortable shooting distance, I'm putting my broadheads within 1 inch of my field points. And that's not because the arrows are drifting. That's because my skill level is 1 inch at 50 yards. You know what I mean? So if I, yep. if I can't outshoot my broadheads, I'm good. Yep. You know,
that's exactly why I think a lot of people make a mistake of keep on making the broadhead bigger, longer, heavier. And then not to mention a lot of customers figure that power is more, front of center is more. Remember, that's an old Chinese thing. Anything to the extreme means the opposite.
Yeah. Because if you gain the extreme in one, you're giving up the extreme in another.
Correct. That's the reason, you know, I saw all this. But then you figure out then you got a small kid with barely 40-pound pull. They're shooting a deer 30 yards, the arrow zipped right through. And then you got a big man with a 70-pound, at least 30-inch draw, brand new Hoyt. You can see the super thin arrow. Zip at a deer, 3-inch, 4-inch, and then the freaking green light bangs with the arrow as the deer runs away.
Yep. But you know, we've talked about this a lot. That's my biggest gripe with the archery industry. Like, I dare say, shame on the industry for this. Because people want bigger arrows. They're getting bigger arrows. They want bigger cutting diameter. They get bigger cutting diameter. And all they keep saying is wider cut, bigger hole, right? Awesome. That is true. But what are you giving up? The companies, the industry does never talks about what you're giving up, only what you gain. And it's an and it's an unfair, unrealistic assessment of what you're getting.
That's exactly true.
That's my biggest gripe. You know, not to mention the fact when you're shooting a 3-inch cutting diameter, if you have an arrow, let's just assume you and I already know that it's not true, but let's assume that you use a quick spin vane, or you use a vane with a 3-degree helical or an offset. People think that arrow is going to spin harder, right? Now let's assume that's true though.
Mm-hmm.
More spin, wider blades, more torque, more of a chance for your broadhead to break inside the animal. No one ever talks about that. And that is what drives me crazy more than anything.
Which is unfortunate, but that is how a lot of things is happening. But then you really think about it. Based on history of time, all the people who literally depends their life on large games to survive, like the American Indian, what is the average bison and whitetail head broadhead size?
I think we've actually talked about this.
Exactly.
And you look at the animal, the smaller the broadhead. The smaller the right, animal, the bigger the broadhead.
Correct. That the bison is average half inch in width, and the whitetail is about 3/4.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yep. That's another thing. See, just like lately, I mean, I'm selling a lot of swing blade and the arrow thing 3 combo for crossbows lately. Because I think people finally recognize when you start shooting over 420 feet per second, that combination actually do wonderful things. Like, if you're interested, it's on my Facebook page. One of my customers put that whole thing out. You can see the animal just like what I described. You will go the Arrowfin 3 and compare to a Blazer. It's going to spin about 300 revolution every 20 yards. The Blazer will spin between 8 to 12.
Yeah. And I want to.
I know it's hard to imagine that, but it's the truth.
You and I have talked about this. And my problem is I don't have a high speed camera. So this summer, if possible, I'm considering taking a ride out to you for like a week, and we could just run all of these tests together. Because I know you've done it already, right? But I want to do it myself and put it out there for people to see. It's one thing for us to talk about and say, no, I ran the test. Trust me, I ran the test.
No. Actually, if you want to see the spin rate, Vital Limit have that Arrowfin 3 at 450 feet per second going through a Pepsi bottle.
Okay.
A 3-liter Pepsi bottle. You can see the Arrowfin 3 actually spin about 1.5 turn within that 3.25-inch space.
That's amazing. Do they have, and is there a Blazer in there as well for the comparison?
No. You can't fly that distance with Blazer at that speed. You store it.
But failure is important to see too.
True. We never did because I mean everybody's supposed to know how it works, but then I found out that most people don't.
And I'm gonna be honest, guys. I'm not trying to shit on other brands. I've said this before. My goal is never to shit on other brands, right? And Blazers have killed more deer than anything else. They've been on arrows that have killed more deer than anything else to date, and that is awesome. They When you're not at the super, super, super high speed, you can get away with it. But also, what are you giving up? When your arrow is only doing eight revs, first off, and I know this isn't what this podcast was about, but the revolutions an arrow makes is so important because it's what helps an arrow stabilize in air.
Mm-hmm.
So if your arrow isn't spinning at a very high frequency or a rate of spin, it takes longer for your arrow to recover. We're not saying
not just that. The arrow shaft itself is part of the like we're doing the Science of Archery podcast. See, that was a major problem. Just like I would use a simple method. Imagine you are putting a noodle. I mean, those are pool noodles on a drill. The moment your speed goes up, that noodle becomes straight. Same thing.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I've used that example. But it's usually for FOC. I usually say, think about taking a rock and attaching it to the front of a pool noodle, and you throw it down your driveway. That pool noodle is going to go wherever the rock goes, and it's going to do it relatively well, like flat, because that rock mm-hmm. is pulling it if it's going fast enough. The second mm-hmm. that rock hits the ground, that noodle is going to bend and flex and go end over end.
Exactly. That's a fantastic example of what happened when you got a heavy FOC and close range shot. That's exactly what happened to the arrow.
Exactly. You know, so I don't know how else to explain it in the sense of think of trying to pull, take something that you want to pull through a piece of wood, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's just a straight dowel and you pull it through, there's a little bit of friction, but it goes through relatively easily. Now, if you take that same dowel and you know what I mean? Like you pull it and let it
wiggle
like,
it,
wiggle, and then try to pull it through, you feel the resistance. And it takes a lot more effort to pull it through. And that's one Correct. Of the things that I want to test under a high-speed camera to show what actually, Ranch Ferry, about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, posted, maybe even longer, but he posted a video on Instagram showing a boar, a dead boar, sitting on a table. They shot through either the skull or the shoulder blade of the boar, of the pig, with a 650-grain arrow.
No question about it. You can do that.
Yes, but they used a high-speed camera to do it. And as you watch the arrow come into frame, it is completely straight. And the instant the broadhead touches the animal, you can see the arrow start to flex. Now, mm-hmm. now that arrow passed through. So I'm not saying that those arrows...
No, but there was one difference. They tell you how far it shot before you hit the broadhead, you hit the animal. If they do it within 12 or 15 yards, it's not even going to happen. If they do it, for example, a 166 under 24 yards, the arrow would have collapsed.
Right.
You have to do it over 25 to 30 yards.
Right. Now, I didn't even take that. This is what I took from that. It's, okay, mm-hmm. higher FOC, heavier arrow. You have a lot of energy to spare on an arrow mm-hmm. like that, right? But now my thing is, what are you giving up to have all this energy to spare? You're giving up speed. You're giving up trajectory. You're giving mm-hmm. up balance. You're giving up the way. So our arrows, they fly parallel to the ground. High FOC arrow is going to fly nose down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have all this extra energy that you could give up on impact. Now, my mm-hmm. Now my thing is, and again, to put it in perspective, that is one mm-hmm. system that works. You can shoot a high FOC, super heavy arrow and find success. But wouldn't you as an archer rather know that your pin gaps are short, are smaller? Your arrow.
I don't disagree with it. Because you remember, archer is a very personal choice.
Yes.
If the person will only do so many yards and will only range it, there are a lot of people pretty much have thought through. They absolutely love the heavy FOC. You know how they could do it? They put a Garmin sight on it, and that's how they're able to overcome it. Which I think is okay.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if that's what you want to do and that's what you're willing to hold that extra weight and then willing to accept the trajectory because you compensate with a Garmin sight, I don't think that is wrong. It's simply a choice that you make.
Yeah.
But remember, just like everything else, after you make the choice, live with it.
Yeah, but this is where I was going with that. My the point I'm trying to make is, if you lower your FOC and you shoot mm-hmm. a slightly lighter arrow that is mm-hmm. built to recover as fast as it can and maintain mm-hmm. structure on impact, you're going to need less energy, lose less energy, and potentially mm-hmm. still have the same amount of energy out the backside of the animal. So the point I'm trying to make is, you can have a lighter arrow, more balanced, mm-hmm. that flies better and still performs exactly the same as a high FOC heavy arrow because you don't have to waste the energy on the impact. That's the point.
Yes and no. Yes and no. Again.
Okay, go ahead.
Because see, the thinking process for the people with the heavy FOC is that they're thinking that the slug force is on their side. Mm-hmm. The downside is that if they shoot an animal and you're closer, the penetration is against you. Mm-hmm. And then the total KE on the high slug force and its arrow supposedly better as long as the arrow passed the initial parabolic loss.
So I'm actually looking something up right now. I'm going to look up arrow kinetic energy because I want to just put something in perspective here. And we're doing this live. I've never actually done this before. So let's say we take a 650 grain arrow at 220 feet per second. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm even going to go higher. Let's say it's 240 feet per second. That's 83.16 foot-pounds of energy. At 220 feet per second, that's 69.87 foot-pounds of energy. Now, I'm going to drop down to my 432-grain arrow at 285 feet per second, which is what my current setup is. That's 77.93 foot-pounds of energy.
But remember, all the stuff we talk about, you miss one of the most important part of the entire arrow.
Go ahead.
It's the energy direction, the energy vector, V-E-C-T-O-R, vector. So if your arrow go in straight, the energy number is right. If the energy go in, the arrows are tilting. That sine and cosine comes in.
Exactly. You lose a lot of energy on the impact. The point I'm trying to make
with that
comparison is a lighter arrow that is flying faster and flying true can deliver, again, on paper, at launch, my arrow has more energy than that heavy arrow at a lighter speed. By 7 foot-pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but see, most people do not do all the. Remember, there's forces of calculation. Initially, you got your entire launch KE. Okay, then you got the heavy FOC, heavy flex. Every flex of the arrow, because of the parabolic action, the magnitude of the flex, you actually use up more energy. As a matter of fact, as the broadhead stays and the tail of the vane goes sideways, the air resistance also increases. So your entire parasitic loss over the flight distance is faster in loss. Yes, your slug force may be higher on impact, but the entire initial phase of the arrow coming into perfect flight is where you lost majority of energy. And if you encounter animal in that stage, you don't have penetration.
Right. Now, I don't, since I figured it out, now, backtrack. The first dozen, I think I've even talked about this before, but the first dozen arrows that I ever had of yours, Jeremy built me. With that dozen, I only got to shoot at one deer. Now, I didn't get the recovery because the deer jumped the string and it was a little left of where I wanted to end up hitting. But on a full frontal shot, my arrow penetrated to the veins at 10 yards. There's no doubt in my mind that arrow passes through completely if that deer is broadside or quartering in one way or another. Now, with where I hit it to not get a kill, I have to believe that I went through the shoulder. I think I went into the chest and went in long ways through the shoulder. If my arrow, and this is, again, there's a lot of speculation going on because the video I have is blurry. It's before I had a true camera, you know, so there are some gaps in, I'll be honest, I'll be transparent. There are some gaps that I'm filling in with assumption. But what I will tell you is a full frontal with a 26¾-inch arrow, it went into the veins.
Wow.
That's all I need to know. Under 15 yards. With a deer staring at me, I hit left of center on the chest, and it still went in that far. I'm sold. When that happened, I was sold. I've never been so pleased with a non-recovery.
And not to mention your arrow able to recover, not penetrate. So the arrow recovered if it's never 15 yards.
Right.
Which if you have an arrow that's 246 or 202, you won't have a prayer without it.
That arrow was 465 grains.
Because
that one was a 300 spine with steel inserts, and now nowadays I make it Now you know my arrow now is an arrow concept 2.0 instead of a 1.0. I use the aluminum inserts and my arrow build is just a little bit different now. But that when I had that experience, I was sold. No doubt in my mind, sold. And then every deer that I've shot with these arrows ever since then has just continued to prove my point.
Well, you know, for the last, since 2016, I've been shooting every year. I shoot about 5 to 7 deers a year. Mm-hmm. I think there's only one deer that walked more than 30 yards.
And we're gonna talk about why here in a second. I'm gonna take a 30-second break here. I just gotta use the bathroom. And be an audio only version. So to wrap this podcast up here, I would like to talk a little bit about bloodletting. And for those of you who don't know, bloodletting is a word that is used to basically describe how something allows blood to flow, how something mm-hmm. cuts, and how the blood is released. So mm-hmm. traditionally speaking, for many, many millennia, a broadhead was made to cut, cause damage, and release blood, so you have a blood trail to follow. And if mm-hmm. if you cut in the right place, now everyone knows that a deer shot is going to die, but every deer takes its own amount of time to die. I mm-hmm. have shot a deer. I have made a terrible shot on a deer, hit it in the liver. It walked 20 yards, laid down, and died 2 hours later. I've had other deer that I've shot in the heart that ran a country mile, and I had to track the blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, while big cuts do kill deer, it can take a while for them to expire based on adrenaline and all that stuff. I will even argue that I've seen more deer heart shot go farther than deer that have been double lung.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Now, you have come out, and I don't know if you're the first person to come out with something like this, or if it's just the type of broadhead that you like to make, but your broadheads, on the other hand, cause a phenomenon known as cavitation, where instead of creating this massive blood wound channel with a flowing blood trail, your broadheads cause the blood to somewhat solidify, and it does not allow the deer to breathe. It cannot inhale and exhale, and it doesn't allow the blood to carry the oxygen through the body the way it's supposed to, right?
Yeah, because it's solidified.
So I want you to talk about why that is so beneficial and why you would recommend using a broadhead. Well, let's wait on that. Talk to us about the differences between a traditional broadhead and the way your broadheads function.
Right. A traditional broadhead is technically all two blade. The good thing about it is that it gives you a maximum cut. You're looking for you want to cut the animal's meat, the blood vessel, and so on. So you have maximum bleeding so that you can track the deer. Because the deer is really going to die, but without the blood trail, you are not going to find the animal. So the bleeding of the animal is very critical, because since in the old days, archery is considered a very non-invasive surgical approach of game getting. So when you shoot an animal through the lung and so on, the animal should expire pretty fast. But then you need the blood trail. That's the reason a pass-through is so important, because you've got a hole supposed to be facing lower. And then the blood will come through there. And then as you follow the deer, hopefully within a few hundred yards, the animal's dead. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea of the concept of a blood trail. Okay? That is pretty much what the traditional archery need to do. Now, as we move into compound bow, all of a sudden, the ability of an arrow is significantly different. Because in the old day, on a traditional bow, nobody was even dream of shooting over 30 yards.
Yeah.
But now, with the compound bow today, actually starting 2003-04, you pretty much can shoot comfortably anything 80 to 120 yards with more than enough KE. Because, see, my understanding is that anything over 45 KE is more than enough to kill. Mm-hmm. That whole process, that's recently led to broadhead like the Switchback XT, the Blitz, the Ramcats. Those are fantastic. Even one of my favorite is the new archery product Nightmare. That's another good broadhead. Those are good all the way to, 320 feet per second? Now, all of a sudden, now the majority of people are shooting really high-speed crossbow. I'm talking 375 all the way to 550. That's the range I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. At that range, aerodynamic is key. And not to mention at that speed, you're way past that 110 KE, yeah. way past that. So at that moment, the only two factors is It's not about KE anymore. You are there 2 or 3, 5 times the KE. Now it's about the arrow trajectory. How strict is the arrow? That means when you aim at it, do your arrow with the broadhead hit where you aim? That's the number one thing.
Of course.
The second.
Shot placement kills deer. Shot placement is
I understand that. See, but those people don't understand. The bigger the broadhead, the more you guarantee the shot placement is not where you aim. Because you cannot guarantee the air is absolutely still. Second, you cannot guarantee that your vane and your broadhead is compatible at that speed.
When you say your vane and broadhead aren't compatible, are you referring to the rotation the vane causes? Or what are you referring to when you say that the vane and the broadhead don't work together?
That's part of the deal. But that's another portion people don't look at, is that when you shoot slower speed and when you shoot slower rotation, your broadhead and your vane is creating 2 separate turbulence and they may not be interacting correctly. Because that's not enough rotation to smooth that out. So the first turbulence will hit the second turbulence and cause the arrow to deviate because that's not enough rotation, which is very important. That's the reason people say, how come the arrows, I mean, if I just simply make it a tiny bit, like I added a quarter of the offset, the arrow seems to be flying better. Because what happens is that you're looking at the entire oscillation cycle of the surface pressure and the surface tension of the air that was disturbed by the broadhead and how that was hitting the vane. That's the reason a lot of people say align your broadhead with the vane on all low speed rotation arrows. That is actually needed.
Okay, so the alignment. So that's funny because that's a very old school thought process.
Align. Yes, because your speed is not high enough.
Gotcha.
In rotation.
Understood. Okay.
Now, but then of course, then you go into like my stuff, like Aerovane 2, Aerovane 3. Aerovane 2 is doing between 90 and 120, and Aerovane 3 is doing 300. Yeah. So of course, it doesn't matter. Because they all have its own set of rotational vortexes. Just go for it. It's 2 gyroscopic spin in it. But then itself, I mean, just like if I do that, I want to utilize all the energy in creating that low pressure. Because there's literally abundance of energy in the shaft now.
Right. Which is what
I mean, let me give you another example. And last year, just for the fun of it, I was shooting the Tomahawk with Aerovane 3 on an arrow that's 655 grain on a 440 feet per second.
My goodness. you could kill a boulder with that thing.
I know. I'll send you a picture of that deer I shot it. It was like the deer ended up dying. I got a blood splatter that's about 6 feet in diameter.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I know. That was a true bloodbath.
Yeah.
I'll send you the picture so you can see it.
Yeah.
So in other words, this is the beauty of this whole system. Oh, by the way, if anybody wants to see this in action, one of my very good customer, Joe, actually sent me the entire video and I posted it on the Facebook page. Actually show you that. Now, first of all, the reason it works so well because he shoot the animal at over 30 yards. He actually shoot at 43, 45 yards. Mm-hmm. So the Aerovane 3 is already at 300 revolution per minute per every 20 yards. Mm-hmm. So when we go through the animal, he actually went through about 25 revolution just on that foot. Because as it goes through the animal, to slow down and the rotation to get higher. And instantly at that moment, because of the cavitation process, it's called the reverse bubble process. Mm-hmm. Because of low pressure, it caused the bubble to form vacuums, which sucked the oxygen out of the blood to be released instantaneously.
Now, isn't that the same way the Annihilator broadhead works? Like Annihilator have the cups built into their...
No, it's not. The Annihilator is based on the Ramcat frontal design. It actually accelerates the air.
So, right. So when the... Because I have them. I have 3 mm-hmm. Annihilators sitting somewhere. I never actually got to shoot a deer with them. But what I liked about them, at least in the description on their website, was it created a high pressure and a low pressure. I forget which one was first and second, but they claimed that caused a big, I don't know the term to use.
Well, what it really does is that the whole idea, actually, I explained that to Brett Fulton when he had the Ramcat, we could call it the frontal scoop. Mm-hmm. It's that when the air hit it, it accelerates the air. So the air will go above the arrow shaft and create a low pressure area. So that when the vane hit it, it does not have less pressure. So the vane will go through faster because the backside of the entire arrow of the broadhead have lower pressure process.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with this. It's nothing to do with the cavitation. It is not a cavitation. It's simply what happened when you ram an air. The backside of the ram air become low pressure zone. But that low pressure is not enough to create what you need. Because we need a true propeller process to give cavitation So the rotation become critical and you have a high speed rotation.
Right. The reason I ask is because when you read through enough reviews through Annihilator, people mm-hmm. love them. They make big holes. They put down deer, no problem. But a lot of guys complain that they did not get a good blood trail from it. And I thought that it was somewhat comparable to what happens with,
Actually, it's pretty simple. The Annihilator, look at where the true cutting ability of Annihilator is the frontal edge of that three points. It's actually creating high speed. With the high speed and a cut together, and with the, unless it didn't rotate, actually for that to work well, you need something like a strict blazer. It will work okay. If that thing is put on an arrow vein, it won't cut well.
Okay, that's good to know. Because like I said, I never really got a chance to try them on an animal. I shot them at targets, but I never got a chance to shoot them at an animal. And in targets, the flight was fantastic. I didn't have mm-hmm. I didn't have any issues with a change of point of impact. None of that. I just never got a chance to. They were. I loved
but you know what?
About them in everything, wherever I got to use them, I loved everything about them.
But see, with that broadhead, if you actually put on a high-speed crossbow where power is abundant, uh-huh. it'll work. Okay. Because you've got enough power.
Sure.
It's just like so many broadhead, as long as you've got enough power, size is really your enemy. Just like so many customers want my arrows and stuff, and then you try to shoot with a Raven 500, you say, Dodge, you don't fly well. What are you using?
Sure.
Oh, 125 grain anvil with Arrow Vane 3. Yeah. It's not going to happen. You go with a target 2 feet at 40 yards. Of course it does.
Now, what about, since you brought up Iron Will, I'm not going to lie, a big portion of me wants to go back to two-blade broadheads. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm shooting the Tooth of the Arrow. I love them. I already said that earlier. I love them. But I want a single bevel broadhead.
But the Iron Will is not a single bevel. The Iron Will is a double bevel.
Well, you can.
If you want to shoot Iron Will, get the 100. The Porter 100 will work.
Iron Will has both. You could choose to get them double bevel, single bevel, left, right. You could literally choose what you want.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So my question for you then is, they have a 100 grain vented broadhead. Do you think mm-hmm. the vented would fly okay with the Arrow Concept system?
As long as it's not over 1 3/8 of an inch. Actually, more like 1 3/16, you'll be fine.
Okay, I'll have to look at that. My other concern, and we could talk about this off air because this isn't what this podcast is about. But we've talked about when you use a two blade broadhead, you need to align the blades with the first dynamic bend.
So, your coving.
Right. So we need to talk about how you could figure that out, because there's no way for you to know where that dynamic bend is until that tube is installed.
Correct.
You know, so,
you don't need to. You need to understand what on a broadhead or a field point, what thread is on it? H32. Yes. That's what the thread is.
Yes.
If you divide 32, which means that it's number 8 size shank, that's 32 thread per inch. Okay. That means 1/32nd of an inch will cause the arrow to turn 360 degrees on a field point. Mm-hmm. So if you really think about it, 1/64 of an inch is all you need at the maximum.
Okay.
So what does that mean? That means if you put a 0.1 millimeter spacer, mm-hmm. you get yourself 17.5 degrees.
Yes. My only gripe with that is it extends out beyond the shaft.
No, it didn't. Actually, you only extend a 0.1 millimeter. Mm-hmm. Then not to mention, that's the reason I told people, if you want to use it, get a pack of 0.1 instead of 0.25. And you, that's a combination, because there's a variation of 0.1. They are not all exactly 0.1. It's more like 0.09 to 0.11 based on how the press is. Okay. So if you tighten it and untighten it, you'll get yourself another extra 2 or 3 degree. So with that spacer stacking, within 3 spacer, you'll get exactly what you need at 0 degree, or plus and minus 2 or 3 degree that you can live with.
Sure. Now, we've also talked about this in the past. I think I'm remembering this correctly, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But mm-hmm. I think we've talked about the dagger being the only two blade that you know of that can remain aerodynamic and fly well without being indexed to 12 and 6. Is that true?
No, that's true. No two blade broadhead would do that. Okay. That's not true. That's okay. Absolutely not true.
Okay.
Because no matter what it is, a two blade. Mm-hmm. Unless a two blade is so thin, like the Switchback XT, which mm-hmm. Eastman Outdoor make, The reason for that, because the blade itself is less than 1/8 of an inch in thick in width. So as it rotates, it doesn't affect aerodynamics. That's the reason that was one of the blades that I really like. Because the entire outer blade is nothing more than 1/8 of an inch. That's all it is.
Right. So let me ask you this then.
Mm-hmm.
Does the glue on, when I install the tube on the front of an aero concept,
mm-hmm.
does the glue have to dry before I find the first dynamic bend? Like, could I install
yes, you should.
With the glue
you can, that's the other way around. I'll just teach you. If you want to take the insert out, put a fuel point in it without the O-ring, heat it up, because the AGUSSE is actually will totally powderize at 320 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay. So technically, you can heat up it and then pull it out. Then your acetone killing the whole inside. You can index your arrow, push it back in with super glue, and that's the end of it with okay. that specific broadhead.
I would not do that for a customer, but I will do that for myself.
Yep. But that actually is much easier to do with spacers, because the total amount of, if you put 6 spacer, you're adding 0.05 grain. What matter does this? Right. No matter.
Right. So, okay. So to wrap this up, okay, we've basically talked about, the main conversation today was broadheads, right? And we talked mm-hmm. about how they function, the pros and the cons of the functionality of different broadheads, what you're gaining, what you're giving up. I got to be honest. One of the biggest things that bug me, and don't get me wrong, I understand the quote unquote plan B arrow or the quote unquote, I understand the concept behind it. But my gripe with that is when you go into something saying, well, if I make a bad shot, I'm covered. You're already expecting to make a bad shot.
And but people keep on saying that I'm going to, it is hunting. I never know how it is going to be. Well, you know what? That's life. Just like, can you absolutely guarantee when you drive up a door to go to work, you will not die?
No.
The chance of it is pretty low, but we accepted the risk. As a matter of fact, you drive on a daily basis, it's even more dangerous than taking on the flight.
Yes.
But we all accepted it. Because see, if you can't accept it, you shouldn't be hunting.
Yes. So my thing is, right, we should... Mm-hmm. I just had this argument with somebody recently. Okay, and I'm not going to say who it was. I just had this argument with somebody recently. The most lethal, the most efficient thing that you could be hunting with is the thing that you practice with the most. And what drives me crazy, more so with archery, because while I do think you need to practice with a gun, I think you can practice less and still be relatively efficient with a rifle. But when it comes to a compound bow, something that you need to stand there and hold, you can't put it on a rest. Okay, a crossbow you could put on a rest. You could lean it on a tree. With a compound bow, there's nothing but you. So if you aren't going into the woods with the confidence that you are going to make the shot every single time,
mm-hmm.
that is so unfair to the animal.
It not
is
just so that. Let me tell you how bad things are.
And you're setting yourself up for failure. I tell my students all the time, and then let me just get this out. I tell my students all the time, they come into class and they go, oh my God, I forgot there's a quiz today. I'm cooked. And I say, you know what? If that's the mentality that you're coming into this with, you're probably right. If you're gonna tell yourself that you're gonna fail before even seeing it, you're probably right. But if you come in and you say, you know what, I'm gonna give it my best shot, or you know what, I've practiced this a lot, I got this. I put my money on that kid every time.
Yep. And you know what, to make things even worse, which I was gonna tell you, which everybody would agree with me, in with today's hunting setup, you think that you're gonna hunt, and if you practice a lot when you're standing. Trust me, the moment you put your that saddle with the body leaning on that, mm-hmm. your entire geometry is so screwed.
Mm-hmm. And that's why sites like, we've talked about this, I think like two podcasts ago that we did. But if you have the ability to get yourself like the Garmin site, for example, that is mm-hmm. like super high. I don't know of a site that costs more than that. So, but even more so, the first site that I know of that had something like that was the mm-hmm. IQ site. If you mm-hmm. guys have the ability to go out and get yourself the IQ site, something with a built-in torque indicator,
mm-hmm.
a full 360 axis torque indicator, that can mm-hmm. really help make sure that you're anchored correctly, that you're not torquing, whether you're on a platform, a saddle, whatever it is that you're hunting out of. Just mm-hmm. having that one extra piece of built-in assurance can make a world of a difference to the
point, oh, absolutely.
To the extent that I was shooting, let's see now, 4 years ago, I think it was, I was shooting an Expedition MX-15, 362 feet per second IBO with a 5-inch brace height. I was shooting out to 80 yards with no peep sight accurately because I had the IQ sight.
Yeah, the IQ sight is actually a very smart design. It's like the rare sight and so on. It actually worked, and I do recommend it. But of course, if you're a traditional guy like me, a concentric circle works too.
Yeah.
All right, that's pretty much...
I got one more question for you, because we've talked about big cuts, you know, 2-inch, 3-inch cutting blades, 1.5 inch cutting blades, and we've pretty much talked about two schools of thought. You can either have a blade that cuts very, very sharply and cleanly and just leaves a red carpet of blood as the deer runs away. Then we talked about your broadheads that even though they don't leave a great blood trail, that it stops the deer's ability to be able to breathe, and therefore they die in sight. My question for you is, would it be physically possible to create a broadhead that was able to do both?
No, because they're exactly opposite. Because see, the energy used, you can only do so much. In other words, it's a choice. Mm-hmm. Okay. The closest one that will do similar, it will be the Ramcat 1 3/8. But then it can't fly faster than anything over 340. It just cannot fly.
But that would be good for compound guys. That would be good for compound guys.
Yes, that's the reason. To be fair, if you want to really shoot a deer under 315 feet per second, the original Ramcat, if you want blood trail, that is the only thing that come close will be my swing blade with the saber. But then because of the Ramcat blade, the way they was designed and they was owning, it actually will outbleed my swing blade saber, which is considered one of the best bleeding blade on the market.
Okay. Now, we were talking off air because this is usually when we come into these podcasts, I have my own kind of perspective and my own background on the things we're talking about. And then we kind of like compare and contrast, right? But the whole bleeding side of things, I don't really have a whole lot of experience with. Like, I'm not a professional. I'm not in the medical field. I'm not, I'm not a butcher. I don't do any of that stuff. So this podcast specifically, you and I kind of sat down for a good 20 minutes before and talked about what we wanted to go over today, which we usually don't do. My thing is, and I have a dagger here right in front of me. I'm holding it, and it's unfortunate that the camera isn't working today. But we were talking about how you said that the dagger works more like a traditional broadhead versus your swing blade or your trauma hawk that works more like the cavitation. Now, but I was under the impression up until that very conversation an hour and a half ago, I thought that the dagger caused cavitation. So does the
if you have used everything through with high speed, not when you're low speed, then low speed, there's no cavitation. Just like when you rotate a propeller slowly, you don't see cavitation. So it's not possible.
So you need high speed for the cavitation to occur.
And high rotation, both.
So now that we have that established, what if you have somebody, because I believe that a majority of my listeners are compound guys. Right. So if somebody is listening to this and they have a compound bow and let's say they want to try the swing blade,
they use the talon and the saber, because a saber is technically a mechanical Ramcat with a 1 7/8 inch cut, which is a 3-fillet knife. Okay. Why would you not get blood?
So your broadheads under a certain speed will leave a good blood trail.
Absolutely. Just like I mean, I got a lot of customers in Texas using my swing blade with the talon. They have 1 3/4, 1 5/8 inch cut. Of course, it's going to leave blood. Okay. And then you're going to cut like crazy, because even when the blade is totally closed, it's still one.
Because I'll be honest with you, and you and I, we have a really great relationship, and we're usually very open with each other, and we've had this conversation before. The fact that these broadheads don't leave, or I thought they don't leave a broadhead, is one of the big reasons why I haven't devoted myself to trying one. I've tried them in the past. I have a dagger right in front of me. I've shot them at the range. They fly great. But I had this perception that they did not leave a blood trail.
Oh, the dagger is no different than any broadhead. It's technically like it's a true two-blade broadhead. So the moment you do it, you just simply put a ladder on it. It'll cut like everything else. I mean, it's a two-blade.
Okay. All right. So then maybe for next year, I need to revisit it then, because I love the
design. Yeah, a lot of problem. Just like I'll use the conversation of Professor Zalek. You have the best design airplane ever. Its lift is crazy. But you never pass it 50 miles per hour. What do you think that airplane is going to do?
It's going to roll on the ground.
Exactly. All right, that fun joke will be the end of this conversation. Yeah.
So, George, I want to thank you. Well, first off, but as we wrap this podcast up, we've had a working relationship now for over a year. We've had a consumer to business owner relationship for a lot longer than that, but we've had a working business relationship here now for the better part of a year, maybe a little bit more. And you have been a staple on this podcast. You have been here very, very frequently. You have shared a lot of information, a lot of education, and a lot of knowledge. And I want to thank you very much for that, because I feel like I have grown a lot as an archer, and I have been able to take this information and share it with other guys, not just through this podcast, but in in-person conversations, face-to-face, working at the bow shops and stuff. So I just want to let you know how thankful and appreciative
I am. You're welcome.
Of you taking your time to join us here as often as you do. So thank you very much for that.
It's all good. Yeah. All right, have a fun day.
Yeah, see you later.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.